All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Welcome back to the program, live inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. My name is Will Nault, alongside Logan Gordon. Lots happening in the sports world today. We've got a busy hour number three for you. If you missed anything from the first 2 hours, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. Go find The Big Show on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Peter Lombardi is in hour number one. Irfan Ghaffar, fun chat with him, all things NHL and Stanley Cup Final, hour number two. And we'll have a fun guest coming up at the bottom of this hour as Danny Austin brings us the latest from the Calgary Stampeders and their week of practice getting set for their week three matchup Saturday afternoon at McMahon against Edmonton. Before that, though, let's bring in Logan Gordon right now. Lots happening in the sports world. Some live sports right now as we speak in Chicago. Plus, of course, the Stanley Cup Final on deck tonight and a whole bunch more. For the latest on that and all we need to know, let's get caught up with Logan Gordon. Logo, where are we starting?
Starting the Stanley Cup Final, Will. Tampa Bay looking to even up the finals with a victory in Game 4 against the Colorado Avalanche at Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay this evening. Tampa Bay will look to build on a 6-2 victory in Game 3 on Monday, but realize there's work to do after they lost the first two games of this best of seven against Colorado. The Lightning are trying to become the first team, Will, to come back from a 2-0 series deficit in a best of seven series in consecutive Stanley Cup playoff rounds after completing the comeback in the Eastern Conference Final against the New York Rangers. Colorado looking to rebound after their seven-game winning streak ended in Game 3. For the first time in this Cup Final, the Avalanche will be the team that need to make adjustments, but they feel good where they are, still up in this series, 2-1. Of course, the home team has won each of the first three games of this series. Tampa has won 8 straight at home and are 8-1 in the playoffs at Amalie Arena. Game 3 was the Avalanche's first road loss in the playoffs. They currently hold a 7-1 record on the road. Jared Bednar, head coach of the Colorado Avalanche, talked a bit about some of the good things that Tampa Bay's done. He's not surprised that they fought back in Game 3.
Hey, Jared, is the Lightning the most complete team that you had seen in this playoffs?
Yeah, I think, definitely. I mean, they're here for a reason for the third time in a row. But every opponent that you face, you face a different challenge, different strengths, different weaknesses that you have to try and exploit, and things you got to be careful of and be aware of on the defensive side of things. But this is a deep team. They're well coached, great goaltending, good special teams. I think that's they're here for the third time for a reason. So I would say yes.
From the Lightning side of things, a big change in that third game, Will, was the Tampa Bay Lightning finally able to get out to a lead against Colorado, even though they started the game down 1-0 thanks to Gabe Landeskog's goal. You would have Anthony Cirelli and then Andre Palat responding in that first period to give Tampa Bay a lead. John Cooper feels as though that's going to be an important step for his team to continue into Game 4 if they want to have more success.
Yeah, the ups and downs that have happened in this series, from Game 2 the way it went, and then your group responds. It's the outside world has been kind of on this up and down. How does your group manage to kind of stay off that ride,
Well, one is to, what's happened in the past has happened in the past. I don't think after Game 2 we had nowhere else to go but up. But how do we stay up? We dug ourselves a little bit of a hole in Colorado. I think we've been through this before, so, it's been much talked about, and we understand that one win is one win, but that's in the past, just like the 7-0 loss is in the past. And this group's had a really impressive run of just turning the page on whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. They're looking about what's in front of us, and the challenge is a team that is probably going to come out pretty determined and no different than any other team we've played. Yes, have we bought ourselves another game in this series? We have, but we need to continue to buy more, and that'll be by being more determined than even we were in Game 3.
The numbers heading into this one, Will, teams that take a 3-1 lead in the best-of-seven Cup Final, 35-1 to go on to win the series. That's 92.7 winning percentage. The only team to come back from such a deficit in the Cup Final was the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs. Teams that lead 3-1 the best of seven any round are 298-31. So they win about 90.6% of the time, and they are 2-1 in this postseason.
I mean, we've talked about it all day, and the numbers you just laid out kind of leads perfectly into evidence as to why this is viewed as a must-win game for the Tampa Bay Lightning. You can't afford to go down 3-1, certainly not against a team like Colorado. It was amazing to see them bounce back and punch back the way they did in game number three, led by Andre Vasilevsky, who made 37 stops in that 6-2 victory. I'm excited to see what happens tonight. I think Colorado desperately would like to continue flexing their muscles and show that they are the better team. But of course, the champs are the champs until they aren't the champs anymore. And they proved why they are the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions in game three. As a result of how it's kind of swung back, Logan, I don't have a great feel on tonight. Looking forward to this game four, though. Should be a lot of fun. And I think there's some hockey fans that would like to see the Lightning even things up, because they would like to see this series go at least six and potentially seven. If the Lightning don't win it, the chances of that happening, of course, are very, very slim. So can't wait for tonight. I think game four is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing what type of storylines play out this evening in Tampa.
Another 6 o'clock start, or around 6 o'clock start, for your viewing pleasure on Sportsnet and CBC, or you can listen to the game right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Sticking with the NHL, while not official from the Panthers yet, multiple NHL insiders, including our own Sportsnet Elliot Friedman, and from Daily Faceoff, Frank Saravelli, reporting that former Winnipeg Jets bench boss Paul Maurice is set to replace Andrew Brunette as the next head coach of the Florida Panthers. It is reportedly going to be a 3-year deal. The 55-year-old coach chose to step down as the Jets head coach in December, telling the team that he felt they needed a different voice. Winnipeg started off the year under Maurice 13-10-5, while Brunette served as Florida's interim coach from mid-October after Joel Quenneville stepped down. He had a pretty good record as their head coach, 51-18-6. Taking over on an interim basis, he'd been an assistant with the club for the past 2 years. Maurice is a veteran coach, 24 years of coaching experience. He's been on the bench for the fourth most games in NHL history, just short of 1,700, and he's seventh all-time in wins with 775. He kicked off his coaching career with the Hartford Whalers in 1995.
Man, he's been around a long time, and obviously stepping aside as bench boss this year in Winnipeg has a lot of time to you know, I guess, look back and reflect and, you know, take some time away from the game. And I think that could prove valuable to him in his new stint with the Florida Panthers. If you look at the available free agents in the coaching world, Paul Maurice should probably be near the top of that list, certainly from experience. And for the Florida Panthers coming off a President's Trophy victory, yeah, you can't help but feel for Andrew Brunette, but after the, you know, Panthers were swept in round two, you kind of felt like maybe there were going to be changes coming for this Panther team, and it starts with their head coach. We'll see what else they do in the offseason when it comes to player personnel, but some mixed reviews, I think, on Paul Maurice. Is he the guy? I don't know. I think time will tell, but certainly from an experience standpoint, he's a guy that can get results and maybe can get them in a short order. So if that's the Florida Panthers, and look at that team and the way they're constructed, are they only going to be around this window, this championship window, for a couple more seasons? If that's the case, would have to think that a guy like Maurice does make some sense, but you can understand why maybe some mixed reviews, as Paul Maurice is known as a bit of a harder coach and certainly a tough coach at times, but can get the most out of teams. So be curious to see how that fit works out in Florida.
Let's move to baseball. A matinee affair for the Toronto Blue Jays after an extra innings loss to the Chicago White Sox last night. An interesting start before this game even got underway, Will. Doug Eddings was the umpire behind the plate last night. He had a rough night, according to a number of different sites that track umpire accuracy when it comes to strike calls. The MLB average, somewhere around 88% accuracy from umpires. Doug Eddings at about 64% last night, which led to frustration on both sides from the White Sox and the Blue Jays. Pitching coach Pete Walker got ejected late in last night's game, arguing balls and strikes. That was a tough look for them. And then earlier on today, before the game even began, Blue Jays hitting coach Guillermo Martinez out to exchange lineup cards with the White Sox and all the umpires, gives it to Doug Eddings, makes sure that he was aware how he felt about his performance behind the plate last night. He was ejected before this one's even started. So the Jays were fired up for this one, and top of one, their unlikely all-star, giving them more reason to get fired up.
Alejandro Kirk found out yesterday that Major League Baseball's all-star balloting had his name as one of the leaders. Blue Jay fans are stuffing the ballot box. You can vote up to five times per day. And Alejandro Kirk and his fans certainly taking advantage of that. He's one of three players in Major League Baseball to have over 1 million votes, not just in his clubhouse, in the game period. One ball and two strikes on a guy that's going to the Midsummer Classic in Los Angeles. And he ropes a base hit the opposite way to give the Blue Jays the lead. Espinal comes in to score. Alejandro Kirk with an opposite field drive, and it's 1-0 Blue Jays.
And the Blue Jays all-star catcher wasn't done there. That was top one. Take you top three.
3-0. Swinging a high fly ball out to left center field. Does it have enough carry? It sure does. Alejandro Kirk has homered again.
Alejandro Kirk is on fire, Will. 3-0 he gives, or 2-0 he gives the Jays a lead there in the third inning. Just an inning later, the Jays would blow this one wide open, courtesy of another guy leading in the All-Star voting category.
Giolito comes set. Sacks are packed. And a 2-0. Bichette drives it out to deep left field. Pollock looks up at the wall. It's gone! The second career grand slam for Bo Bichette is an absolute no-doubter into the seats in left field. And the Blue Jays have blown it open. 7-0 Toronto.
Top seven, they just don't want anything to do with extra innings tonight.
2-1. Hernandez drills it. Deep left field, and you can forget it. That ball's going to go a country mile. Teoscar Hernandez with number seven. Deep into the seats in left. Two-run home run for Teoscar. 9-1 Toronto in the seventh inning.
That's where we stand right now, Will. Blue Jays out to a 9-1 lead midway through the seventh inning on Sportsnet. And funny, we talked about all that. You heard Ben Wagner talking on that first call about all the votes that Alejandro Kirk has had, and he was going to get some more votes after tonight's game.
Yeah, he certainly, you'd think he would. How about a hat tip to Ross Stripling, who goes six innings, giving up just five hits and one run, striking out five and giving up just one walk. Pretty awesome. And Stripling continues to show his worth to this Blue Jay team. We've talked a lot this week, Logan, about the uncertainty and maybe the rockiness that exists in this team's rotation. Kevin Gausman, kind of hard to believe when you look at last night's game and how it ended and going all those innings and all those runs.
He pitched really well last night.
He pitched unbelievably. Dylan Cease had a no-hitter through five. And then, of course, things really blew up in the second half of that game. But back-to-back outings here where the Blue Jays get a good performance from their starters. So that's awesome to see. And, of course, the bats have come alive today as they've got an eight-run lead now in the bottom of the seventh inning. But, hat tip to Ross Stripling is maybe the underrated guy in terms of this rotation and really how valuable he can be for this Blue Jay team.
Blue Jays looking to finish this one off. They don't want any part of extra innings tonight. You want to watch the rest of that game, wrapping it up in the last couple innings on Sportsnet this afternoon. They're up 9-1 heading into the bottom of the seventh. MLB scoreboard today, Will, has four other games underway. Astros are up 5-3 on the Mets, bottom of six, and two games just getting underway in San Diego. The Padres and Diamondbacks are scoreless, top one. Bottom one in Texas, Rangers and Phillies are scoreless. Your late one tonight, 7:49 on the West Coast, as the Kansas City Royals are in Los Angeles or Anaheim, I guess it is, in Angel Stadium to take on the L.A.
Disneyland.
Angels. Yeah, we're going to Disneyland. Royals, Angels coming your way. Your late game tonight on MLB Network, 7:49, first pitch. We talked about this a bit earlier, and it's only gotten more sad today. What a day for the city of Baltimore, Will. We talked a bit earlier about Ravens linebacker Jalen Ferguson passing away this morning at the age of 26. Police responding to his home to reports of a questionable death, found him not breathing, receiving treatment from medical personnel. No indications of trauma or foul play. He was a third-round pick of the Ravens back in 2019, getting set for his fourth season with the team. So they're obviously heavy hearts for the young man today who lost his life in the middle of a promising NFL career. And then one of the greats, one of the guys synonymous with Baltimore football, in my mind at least, Will, about 20 minutes ago, news that Tony Siragusa, Goose, one of the stars of the Baltimore Ravens Super Bowl run, one of the stars of that Hard Knocks season, has passed away today in his sleep at the age of 55. Plenty of people, including our own Jason Lockenfora, who spends a lot of time in Baltimore, really just talking about what is an incredibly sad day in the area of Baltimore, who lose a current football player in the middle of his career and a guy that was beloved there. Tony Siragusa, former defensive tackle, who of course played in Baltimore and in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody who played with Siragusa says nothing but good things. He was a great character. He was phenomenal on television.
Oh, he was awesome.
Just an awful day. Jamal Lewis was talking about this today when asked about Siragusa's death. Just an awful day to be a Raven and an awful day to be in Baltimore. As you mentioned, losing someone in the middle of their career and then losing someone who is synonymous with that Super Bowl championship team. Of course, you think about the big names like the Ray Lewis's of the world. But Tony Siragusa was a huge part of that Ravens team, an absolute monster defensive tackle in the middle of that defense. And man, it's a tough day in Baltimore. Might have to get Jason Lockenfora on at some point this week to reflect on that and on Siragusa's life, who was beloved by a lot of people. His old man had heart disease. It ran in his family. I believe his dad died of a heart attack. Certainly you wonder if maybe that is resulting in what we've seen now with Siragusa. But, man, that's an awful day for Baltimore and Ravens sports fans because those are two gentlemen who have lost their lives way too early.
A couple of hockey notes and one local baseball note to finish up headlines today, Will. We'll start with news from the federal government in regards to Hockey Canada today. The federal government announced that they are freezing Hockey Canada's funding until the organization signs up with a federal agency that will independently investigate abuse complaints and issue sanctions. That from Minister of Sport Pascal Saint-Onge. The federal agency is the new Office of the Sport Integrity Commissioner, which began receiving and addressing complaints regarding Canada's national sports teams on Wednesday. Of course, all of this stemming from a settled lawsuit that was filed in April when a woman said eight unnamed CHL players, including members of Canada's 2018 World Junior team, sexually assaulted her in June of that same year in a London, Ontario hotel following a Hockey Canada event.
I think this thing has got many layers, and we have not heard the end of this situation with Hockey Canada. It's a bad look. They have certainly not done themselves any favors in court, and we're talking about an organization who is now admitted to having multiple complaints of similar nature for the last five consecutive years. Not good, and certainly have not heard the end of this story. Or Hockey Canada.
Alex Radulov expected to return to the Continental Hockey League. This per Stars general manager Jim Nill. At the Memorial Cup today as well. Action continues. 4 p.m. puck drop between the St. John Sea Dogs and the Edmonton Oil Kings. Edmonton opened up the Memorial Cup yesterday, Will, with a 4-3 loss against Shawinigan. And last but not least, it's a game day at Siemens Stadium for the Okotoks Dogs. If you're looking for something to do on a sunny Wednesday in the city of Calgary and area, head down to Siemens Stadium. They're getting set to face the Fort McMurray Giants in their first of a three-game homestand. First pitch set for 7:05.
Great night for a night at the ballpark. No rain today, folks.
No.
Get on down to Siemens Stadium. Great way to spend a summer evening.
There's your Wednesday headlines, pal.
Appreciate it, Logan. It's a busy day in sports. Glad we can get you caught up on all you need to know. The Blue Jays game, by the way, remains in the bottom of the seventh inning. Jays leading the White Sox 9-2 in that series finale from the south side of Chicago. That game in the bottom of the seventh, live right now on Sportsnet West. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll shift gears, talk a little football in the Canadian side of the border as the CFL is heading into week number three. The Calgary Stampeders have won back-to-back games in thrilling fashion. How do we set things up for week three? We'll do that and more as we continue on hour number three. Big Show is live in downtown Calgary on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hour number three rolls on live inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. My name is Will Nault alongside Logan Gordon. It's a game day in the Stanley Cup Final. Game four live right here on Sportsnet 960 just after 6 p.m. You can also watch it on Sportsnet and CBC. Blue Jays in action right now, leading the White Sox 9-2 in the top of the eighth inning. That game is live on Sportsnet West as we speak. Not live until Saturday afternoon at McMahon, but to week three in the CFL, we'll see the Calgary Stampeders host the Edmonton Elks. Week three gets underway tomorrow night in Montreal with the Alouettes playing in their home opener against the 2-0 Saskatchewan Roughriders. A lot of 2-0 teams in the West Division. It's been a fun start to the CFL season, and a man who's witnessed some crazy Stampeder action in both of the opening weeks of the CFL season is the one and only Danny Austin, who joins us right now from Post Media. Danny, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great. I just flew back from Toronto this morning after a couple of days with my family, so I'm doing very well, and yeah, Saturday night was a fun one.
Little extended road trip for you. That's a way to take advantage.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the advantages of the CFL beat. You're going to these Canadian cities, and generally, you know some people, so you get some fun socializing time on top of the work. It's a good time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know that you tweeted this, I believe it was after the game Saturday in Hamilton, or on the weekend in Hamilton, and that was the fact that, hey, this is will go down, I think, as one of the craziest games you can remember in the CFL. And in terms of regular season comebacks, that might be up there when it comes to all time. I was not expecting that second half, and what a show it was from the Stampeders and Ticats.
Well, yeah, like, that's the thing, right? I mean, you hear that they were down 24-0, and they came back, and they won 33-30, and that's obviously one thing. But, like, they deserved to be down 24-0. Like, they were really bad in the first half. There's no, like, getting around that. And that was kind of the shocking part, was that there was absolutely no indication that they were going to put it together, and then all of a sudden they just did. And, you know, I do think, and I'm sure you're going to ask about them, but central to all of it was Bo Levi Mitchell, and that, you know, you got this guy who – it seems like media across the country have just been writing his obituary, basically. And he just went out and just said, you know, I'm still here. Y'all must have forgot. It was pretty amazing to see the guy who's covered him for a lot of years here.
Yeah, and let's actually go down that road right now, because you're right, we were going to go there anyways. But since you brought it up, I'm curious where you are on this. I don't know if we were expecting it, but you're right. The noise has been there for quite some time. And it would have been very easy for Dave Dickinson to give Bo the hook in that game and, you know, let Jake Mayer play. But Dave Dickinson sticks with his guy, and it pays off with an unbelievable second half, and likely, at least you would hope, quiets that narrative now for a few weeks. But just your thoughts on that decision from Dave Dickinson to stick with his guy. And really, I think for – not that he needs – a vote of confidence, but I think that shows a lot of trust in a guy like Bo Levi Mitchell. And again, it paid off with the come from behind victory.
Yeah, I mean, it's just flat out good coaching, because the reality is, I mean, look, they scored 3 points in the first half. The numbers were not good. But if you were watching closely, I mean, they had a 40-yard pass to Reggie Bagleton that was called back because Kamar Jordan was offside. It had nothing to do with the play. It was an offside call. You know, so Bo actually wasn't really the problem. There were a couple drop passes that definitely should have been caught. But one way or another, you got a guy who, you know, he has less than 100 yards in the first half. They have only put up 3 points. And, man, like, I saw it, just the chatter on Twitter was all people saying, pull Bo, it's time to give Jake a chance. And not just in the game. I mean, people were saying it's time to give, you know, Jake the reins of this team. And I have said this a couple times. I mean, I just think it's unfair. I just feel like every mistake Bo Levi Mitchell makes is just sort of super amplified. And it's like, is he Tom Brady? No, but he doesn't need to be Tom Brady. So he came in, and I mean, he was a superstar. Like, and I say that in a real way, like, both Kadeem Carey and Peyton Logan, the Stampeders' two running backs, were out of the game. They did not have a running option in the second half. So the Ticats knew they were going to throw the ball every time, and they both still managed to find the receivers, put up yards, and get in the end zone. I just can't speak highly enough about the performance. And I do think, I mean, he sort of made a joke afterwards about, you know, he wasn't going to put his middle fingers in the air to the critics, but he hopes that, you know, they kind of saw him now. And I think it was fully justified because he was that good. And I honestly think that his demise has been overstated.
Yes, and I think this goes a long way now into what we see in terms of the rest of the season. Really a huge turning point, not only in that game, but maybe for the season with Dave to stick with his guy. And I said this a couple of times already to a bunch of people, whether it's media or fans or even to Logan on this show. I mean, this is a coach who has been in the shoes of a quarterback that maybe is facing some questions or maybe feeling the pressure a little bit. So, like you said, a good coaching decision from Dave Dickinson. And I think it helps that, you know, maybe he was in those shoes as a player at one point.
Well, and I also think, I mean, this is, I've talked to Jake Mayer's agent, and one of the things that his agent said is that they wanted Jake to stick with Calgary because there was that coaching and there was that understanding of sort of not just quarterbacking in the physical sense, but the psychology of it. So I think this is good for Jake Mayer. You know, it's always stay ready. He had to come in week one, but just because you struggle, you know, you know that your coach is going to have your back and stick with you. So I think it's good for everybody. And honestly, I mean, it is a credit to Dave Dickinson, and Dave has never wavered. 2019, Bo's struggles are to be honest, like, really overstated. But last year, he did throw a lot of interceptions. He didn't look like himself. Stampeders for the first half were not the Stampeders we were used to. But I think people forgot that Bo also led them to what it was. They were 6-1 down the stretch. They ended up being a pretty good football team there with Bo at the helm. So I don't really understand why people across this country outside of Calgary seem so eager to sort of be done with Bo Levi Mitchell or say that he's done. But, you know, you guys all know him. He's a guy that is easy to root for if you know him, and he's putting in the work, and it's cool to see. And credit to Dave Dickinson for giving him that opportunity.
You got anything on the Hamilton game before we move on?
Well, I thought the defense did a pretty outstanding job, Danny, given, you know, everything that had happened in the first half. Jameer Thurman makes a couple of key plays, one on that QB sneak. He gets the interception late, and, you know, the secondary, for being as many guys down as they are, and having Trey Roberson banged up in that game, they really tightened up in that second half and gave the offense a chance to make that comeback.
Yeah, I don't have the exact number in front of me. Jean Lefebvre, who's the Stampeders media guy, tweeted out that, like, once Trey went down, the Stamps had, like, a combined 30 games of experience in their defensive backfield, and I think that 26 of them were Raheem Wilson or something like that. So, I mean, this was a young group. Yeah, I mean, the pressure only goes up as the offense starts clicking and suddenly you have zero room for error. So for them not to only kind of like hold their own, but also come up with, you know, that Titus Wall touchdown where he grabs the ball on the short yardage play and runs it in the end zone. I mean, that's the game right there. I don't know if the Stamps really had time to come back had the Ticats put 3 points on the board later in that drive. So, yeah, it was impressive. And I mean, with all of this being said, I want to be clear. Again, that first half was terrible. They cannot play like that for much longer. These two games against Edmonton aren't big, but they got Winnipeg coming up. And if you go down, you know, 24 for sure, but even 14 to Winnipeg, you're not coming back into the game. So they have to fix the things that were wrong in the first half. But you can make the argument that they sort of did in the second. So, yeah, lost to like the...
And at least I'm sure you're in the same boat, Dan, but it's kind of nice to see Rene Paredes hit a couple of clutch kicks again after what was probably a sour taste to end his year last year.
Yeah, I mean, he had the worst game of his career in the West semifinal. I'm not going to say he lost them the game, but he missed 3 field goals. If he'd hit one of them, one of those 3, they win the game. So with all that said, it was one of those ones where it's like, well, what are you going to do? He's Rene Paradis. He's been so good and so consistent for 10 years. He had one bad game. The timing was bad, but nothing you can do about it. You're not going to get too upset with the guy. We all have bad days at the office every once in a while, but he's been perfect. I mean, he's been the best kicker in the league again this year. It's like nothing happened. So he's certainly not lacking in confidence. And, yeah, he's one of those guys again. He's a longtime Stampeder. He quietly just goes about and does his job. I will say as media, when he is this consistent, he's a superstitious guy. So this is where you don't get any quotes from him because he doesn't want to jinx it. But other than that, I mean, it's amazing to see. And the Stampeders, I don't think that anyone in the locker room or in the coaching staff takes him for granted. But I sometimes think, you know, the rest of us might, because he is just, he doesn't miss 99% of the time.
He's Danny Austin, all things Stampeders for Post Media. Calgary hosting Edmonton Saturday in Week 3 CFL action. The 0-2 Elks in town to visit the 2-0 Calgary Stampeders. Let's focus in on some practice notes as this team gets set for Edmonton on the weekend. I think everyone's wondering, and maybe some good news. I think it's never good, Danny, when you see a training staff looking at a player's Achilles, but it sounds like Kadeem Carey's avoided the worst here.
Yeah, I thought they were looking at his ankle. I want to be clear. I'm not going to call out the report as being erroneous, but I think it was more ankle. I watched him very closely on the second half, sort of all second half on the sideline. And like, he was walking around absolutely fine. You know, he was bouncing up and down a little bit. He looked like, you know, for a civilian, he wasn't that hurt. It's just, I don't think he had the explosiveness that he would need to go in and play running back. But yeah, he's been practicing this week. Him and Peyton Logan, the backup, who Peyton Logan looked really good in relief there before sort of taking an ugly hit to the head. So I have no idea with Logan in terms of concussion protocol, but both of them are. I don't know if they're available, but they have been practicing. They've had their helmets on. They've been doing first-team drills. So that is definitely, I don't want to say dodged a bullet, but it seems like they dodged something and that they should be available, if not this week, definitely next game.
Yeah, and I mean, we can talk about it a lot. I know he was out for, 90% of that Hamilton game, but Kadeem Carey has become a real key to this team's offense.
Oh, man. I honestly think that if you go back to last season, funny enough, the Hamilton game, that's the game that they lost. It was awful, and they went down. They were 2-5 at the time, had a bye week and came back, and they just started feeding Kadeem Carey the ball. He probably saw his touches double in the back half of the last year. And that's what sort of unlocked the offense. It's so important. We all say the CFL is a running or a passing league, but you can't do it without the run game. And I honestly think that there's no one better at running back in the entire league than Kadeem Carey right now. He's just amazing. And he's got that combination of speed and power that, you know, you see why he was an NFL draft pick. You know, injuries kind of got in his way down there, but the Stamps are lucky to have him because, boy, like, he's special. He's a lot of fun to watch, and he's one of those guys. He's got a big smile on his face when you talk to him, but I certainly hope that I never have him running at me and trying to bowl me over because he can do it.
What about at receiver in terms of this team and maybe some shuffles for week three? Does it look like it's status quo right now, or have there been some movement?
No, not really. I mean, we got some movement on at the Canadian positions. You know, I think Jalen Philpott, the first-round pick out of Calgary Dinos, who obviously a lot of people are excited to see, I think he's getting closer to breaking into the lineup. But even then, you know, the Stamps have real Canadian depth in Richardson Daney, Luther Hakanivanu, Tyson Middlemost, Colton Hunchak. So in terms of the Americans, kind of the star guys, the Kamar Jordans, the Reggie Bagleton, and Malik Henry, they were all practicing. They all looked good. They're all flying around. Absolutely no issues there. And Kamar Jordan, it's worth noting. I mean, he very quietly had over 100 yards receiving. Like, no one's talking about it at all because the focus is all very much Bo and the comeback. But he had 109 yards. So here you go, a guy in his early 30s just keeping it going. And Reggie Bagleton, I also think, stepped up. His numbers weren't huge, but he made some really big catches. So, you know, early season CFL, I hate saying this, but it's sort of a lot of mistakes. It's guys figuring it out. But I think we're seeing those Stampeders receivers already on the same page with Bo, and that's awfully exciting.
You think latest addition to the backfield, Tremaine Washington, gets his first start this week?
100%, yes, I do. I do not think that Trey Roberson is going to play this week. I don't know exactly what happened, but it was clearly a shoulder injury. I think Roberson is out. which probably means that Deontay Ruffin moves to that boundary corner spot. Fortunately, Jonathan Moxey, who is their field corner, I believe will be back in. He missed last week, and you know, he's a CFLPA All-Star. Moxie's a real talent. So, yeah, I think Tremaine Washington needs to be in there, the Stamps need him. And I also think that because they're so young, you've got a guy, it's not like Tremaine Washington is an 8-year veteran or anything, but he has played in the CFL. He was tied to the lead league in interceptions last year. The Stamps certainly want to start creating more turnovers. So I think Tremaine Washington has real, real value, both as a leader, both as a guy with some experience, but also, you know, just as a legit player. He's done it and he can do it. So, yeah, I expect him in this week 100%.
What about the linebacking core? We know Cam Judge was a little banged up coming off of last week. Has he been out there on the practice field? What's his status ahead of this game against the Elks?
Yeah, Cam Judge was practicing today. That doesn't obviously guarantee anything, but he was flying around. He was looking good. I mean, he's tied for the league lead in tackles right now, so the Stampeders are getting what they paid for. And I do think that him and Jameer Thurman at middle linebacker, you know, they are – that's the foundation. That's what everything else is sort of built around in this defense. You might say Mike Rose and Derek Wiggum in the middle as well, but it really is – that linebacking group has been – I don't want to say that they've necessarily been at their best yet, but they're showing flashes of why they're just so dynamic. You can drop Flo or Malade back there and put Thurman on the line. It just throws some real weird coverages at teams that seem to be confusing them and causing havoc. So, yeah, Cam Judge, I expect Cam Judge in. I'll be honest with you. I think Trey, of the guys who started last week, I think Trey may be the only guy who's not available this week on the defense. I feel relatively comfortable saying that.
By the way, were you just sneezing during question? If so, bless you.
Thank you. I was holding a sneeze in. I didn't let it go.
What
I'm not
pearl.
Sure you're supposed to do that from a health perspective. But
no,
I didn't
want
to.
It's bad for your heart. Yeah. Come on.
Well, I didn't want to subject your loyal listeners to that.
You're a pro's pro, Danny. We appreciate that about you. Have you gotten a look at the Stampeders upcoming opponent at all this season, the Elks? And I guess if so, what have you made of them? I know everyone talked about that week one drubbing they faced in BC, and then they lost their home opener to Saskatchewan last week.
Yeah, I think they're pretty terrible.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you.
No gray,
you know,
there.
To be fair, they held close for some three quarters with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders last week. The Riders are a team who I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around what they are right now, because they may either be the best team in the league or they might be the third or fourth best team in the West. I don't know. But the Elks, look, they did look better than in week two than they did in week one. And, like, I think, look, if you're in Calgary and you follow the Stampeders, we're all sort of rooting for Nick Arbuckle, a quarterback there. He looked okay in week two. Kenny Lawler is an elite CFL receiver. And I do think that with Trey Roberson out, that's an area where I really think that the Stampeders are going to have to really game plan to try to limit the damage that, that Lawler can do. But I mean, you know, James Wilder, their running back, has not had a whole lot of success against the Stamps. So in my opinion, going into the season, I kind of had that Hamilton game circled as the one that was sort of an acceptable loss in the first four. The Stamps now have two against Edmonton with a bye week in between. I think it's a real disappointment if they don't come out of those two games 4-0. And that sets up them being 4-0 versus Winnipeg in mid-July. And man, that's a lot of fun if you like the CFL, because those are two teams that don't like each other and they're real powerhouses. So it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, unique couple of days here weeks for the Calgary Stampeders with this home game, a bye week, and then up the road to Edmonton. The Elks will play all 3 weeks. And yeah, based on, you know, A, just coming off of a bye, and then you know as well as anybody, Danny, that Dave Dickinson and John Huffnagel really like to come off strong off of their bye weeks. They don't want to use that as an excuse or anything. So it could be an interesting couple of days here a couple of weeks in the Battle of Alberta.
Yeah, and it's again, though, I mean, you know, it's not going to make up for what happened in round two of the NHL playoffs, but it is a chance for CSEC to get a little bit of revenge on Edmonton here. The Stampeders are a better team than Edmonton. Like, that's not controversial to say. So, look, last year the Stamps had some bad luck in the early going. I don't think they were bad as their 2-5 record in mid-September last year. They've had a little bit of good luck this year, and I think there's a real good chance that they're 4-0 in what, I guess 3 weeks now. So it's Edmonton. I'm not saying it's not going to be they're not going to be fun games. They might be, but it would be hugely disappointing both internally and externally if the Stampeders lose either of these two games.
A lot of talk going into the year about full training camps returning, and you know, was the 1 year just the one down year in offense, or is this going to be, you know, are we going to see a return back to what makes the CFL exciting? And we've talked obviously about Calgary's come from behind victory over Hamilton. You know, the first 2 weeks, I would suggest that we are going to see a pretty exciting summer in three down football.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. And I mean, I think it's also the in-team or the in-person meetings that they didn't get last year. The players talk about that a lot, being really, really challenging in terms of integrating new guys and all that. But it has been better. And I was very open last year. I did think that the quality of play, I couldn't pinpoint the reasons, but I thought it was pretty bad for most of the season. I thought the playoffs were absolutely exceptional last year. But there were some tough games to watch last year, not necessarily with the Stampeders, but around the league. And this year it's kind of been the opposite. It's really, really encouraging because, you know, there's a lot of things that this league does to not sell itself, but the on-field product is normally, you know, the best selling point. And this year we're seeing it, it's playing out. And especially with the Stampeders, they're right now, they're the most exciting team in the league, in part because they're so bad in the first half and have to recover, but it's a lot of fun.
Well, and I know the weather report doesn't look good, but let's try and get some more people to McMahon on Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to do the Stamps marketing team's job for them, but I will pretty
You're
much.
You're not hired in that department? I thought you were part of that staff.
I'm not. That's what comes fancy. I'm just the guy who sneezes on the radio. No, I mean, look, I honestly, this is a really, really fun team. You know, they can put up points. They're not perfect, but I think football's kind of boring when it's perfect. You know, they're a work in progress. They're a likable team, and they put an entertaining product on the field. So if you're looking for something to do Saturday, I guarantee you you'll have a good time. I'll say that.
You are now free to sneeze. Appreciate the time, and we'll let you go. Danny, thank you.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Cheers.
There is Danny Austin, all things Stampeders for Post Media, Calgary and Edmonton, Saturday at McMahon in week 3 action in the CFL, which, of course, gets going tomorrow with Montreal's home opener, the 0-2 Alouettes, welcoming the 2-0 Saskatchewan Roughriders. Danny joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. For every dollar you spend, earn points towards free pizza with their rewards program. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar. Find them at 6060 Memorial Drive in the Northeast. That'll do it for our show today. Don't forget, you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcast. Hour 1, Hour 2, and now Hour 3 can be found on Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe now and never miss a moment or a guest. Shout out to Peter Labardius, to Irfan Ghaffar, and of course, Danny Austin, who joined us on today's program. An update for you, Blue Jays leading the Chicago White Sox 9-4 in the bottom of the 8th inning. Chicago, though, with the bases loaded. The boys will keep you up to date on that. That game's live right now on Sportsnet West. And the Stanley Cup Final returns tonight. Game 4, live on Sportsnet 960 and on Sportsnet and CBC. Enjoy that. We'll talk to you tomorrow.